Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, March 20th, 2024, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. Happy spring! The equinox is on Wednesday, March 20th. Woohoo! I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Let's do update on me, and then we'll do update on Ron. I had a lovely bike ride. Two lovely bike rides. I rode my bike on Wednesday and I did well, and I was tired on Thursday and Friday, but no more than usual. I find that working, you know, doing my normal naturopathic duties at Fran Storch ND is exhausting. And, you know, because I wind up working, you know, 8 to 10 hour days, and they're very long and they're very tiring. And I am able to recover from them on the days that I don't do that. But it's concerning how tiring it is. And I think I get more tired because of my condition. When it came to Saturday, I was still recovering from fatigue. And that morning, I wound up taking a nice yoga class, a Zoom yoga class in my bedroom, just a moderate class. It was very lovely and relaxing. And I felt really good after that. And then I went out and rode my bike 20 miles. And then I proceeded to do more exciting stuff during the day. I made gluten-dairy-free Irish soda bread, because I was unable to get it from the bakery where I usually get it. Just didn't work out, because bakery I like to go to is in Glastonbury, and I just couldn't. I had no reason to go to Glastonbury, so I didn't get it. And then I realized that making Irish soda bread isn't that hard. I did it, and probably putting together the ingredients for the delicious the gluten-dairy-free Irish soda bread took me maybe half an hour. So if you want to do it, you can get recipes online, which is what I did. I used gluten-free baking flour, which had xanthan gum in it, and the xanthan gum makes it chewier. So my old high school choir director asked me online, he said, what did you use for liquid? And what you do is, they recommend using butter, and what you do with the butter is kind of neat. You take the butter and you crumble it so it makes pea-sized dots, and then you dump it into the flour because you're making a coarse dough. And so the other liquid comes to an extent from the dried fruit. The dried fruit will suck up the liquid and make moist. So it called for, if desired, a cup of raisins. And it said you could use raisins, black currants, or cranberries. So I said, why not all three? So I got dried all of those, and I did mostly cranberries, which is probably why you like the bread so much. Mm. So it was more cranberries, more than half cranberries, and then a bunch of black currants and a bunch of organic raisins. And so that made a little moist. And then the other thing is you make fake buttermilk. Because if you want to make it vegan, if you want to make it, well, just dairy-free and or vegan, then you take vinegar. And it said to use white vinegar. I couldn't find any white vinegar in the house. We're out of white vinegar. But do you use it for cleaning or something?
Yeah.
Because I couldn't find the white vinegar, which is fine. So instead of white vinegar, I used organic apple cider vinegar, and it worked just fine. Yeah. You mix 2 cups of your favorite dairy substitute, preferably a fatty one. The one I chose happened to have a mixture of almond macadamia and cashew milk, so they had some fat in them. And so you could use any fatty dairy substitute. So you could use hemp milk if you wanted to. You could use cashew, almond, coconut, any of those. And I used this mix, and it worked just fine. And so you put 2 cups of that, and then you stir in a tablespoon or two of the apple cider vinegar, and you just stir it together, and that's your liquid. And you dump that in the dough, and you knead it, and it's great. And then I put in, I don't know, a tablespoon or two of caraway seeds, so it wasn't overwhelmingly caraway-y. A lot of times Irish soda bread will have a lot of caraway seeds in it. So I put it together, and I mushed it together, and you have to make a big cut in it before you put it in the oven. You make a big round and put it in the oven, and, you know, there's baking soda, baking powder in it, which that's what makes it soda bread. And it rises a little bit, but it's dense and chewy, and it came out great. So I made that on Saturday and, you know, did the laundry and yin yoga and like that. And it turned out that it was too much because the next day I was completely exhausted. And so I had to have a spa, as Ron said, a spa day, no bike, regular yoga. I tried to take yin yoga, but the Zoom at my favorite yoga studio was not letting me in. So I just found an online yin yoga, and that was fine. And so I did a lot of relaxing yesterday. And so what I'm doing is, because I'm tired is a factor for me, I'm trying to take things that help to energize me. So I'm taking Eleuthero. I'm taking rhodiola, and I'll talk about some of these. Eleuthero, rhodiola. I'm taking spirulina, which is a blue-green algae. Talked about that last week. I'm taking chlorella. We also talked about that last week. I'm going to talk more about chlorella this week as we got started on it. So I'm taking that, and I'm also upping my game on liver detox. So I'm thinking that the spray glutathione that I'm taking, I'm not that excited about. And so I'm taking NAC anyway, NAC and vitamin C, and I'm adding in selenium. So my body will make more glutathione. And glutathione is a great detoxifier. So I'm taking that. I'm also taking cordyceps. Right now I have cordyceps pills, and I only take one of those a day. When I'm done the cordyceps pills, I'm going to go to cordyceps liquid extract. And that'll go in my Limerita, my my big drink that I take that has all the different herbs in it that are helping my Lyme disease. And the way they're helping my Lyme disease is mostly mostly to support my immune system and protect my organs. This is what Stephen Buhner talks about in his books. He talks about the importance of making the body inhospitable. And this is what Mariah said when I talked to her. Make the body inhospitable for the tick-borne organisms to live. That antibacterials are not as important as the rest of it. I mean, if you want to use antibacterials, you can, but it's not as important as making your body healthy. Sounds awesome, right? Because there are a lot of people who get Lyme disease. They may get a symptom or two, and then they're fine. Or they get Lyme disease, they take a course of antibiotics, a short course of antibiotics, and then they're fine. That's not me right now, because it's likely that my immune system was impacted, unfortunately, by my reaction to the COVID-19 vaccination. So I'm having more of a hard time fighting this. And it's also because of stress, because I'm still working and my job is stressful and it's hard for me to get the amount of rest that I could really use to help this. I do the best that I can. I rest when I'm not working most of the time. And on days that I am working, I do restorative activities. I do a lot of yoga. Yoga happens every, right? Yoga happens with me every day, right? Morning and night.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm very very good with the yoga, either moderate or yin or restorative yoga. So last night when I couldn't get on the restorative class, I just found one on YouTube and did that. And that was great. And so it was yin instead of restorative. And so I found that. And then I did another really brilliant thing, which I hadn't thought about. And thanks to my staff person, Carrie, who has all the Buhner books. And I had a Buhner book of my own, but it was mostly focused on Babesia and some things that I don't have. And so she gave me the books that focused on Bartonella and just plain old Lyme. So I started reading them, and I hadn't read Buhner before. By the way, if you have tick-borne illness and you want to read Buhner, I recommend it. May he rest in peace. He really did a wonderful service to the people of the Lyme community, because the Buhner books are really engaging. They're easy to read. I mean, there is a lot of science in them, but I find that he writes in a very accessible way. It's not dry. It's funny sometimes. And he writes so that you can understand it. Even if he's talking about cytokines, he makes a lot of helpful lists. He's like, this herb can help with these different systems in your body, or these are the herbs that can help with these different, like it's a repertory and a materia medica. Materia medica would be, here's the herb and here's what it does. A repertory would be, here's the set of symptoms, and then here's the herbs that help with that. And or here's the set of pathways, of inflammatory pathways, and here's the herbs that help with that. So that's a repertory, and those are terms that you use in homeopathy. The repertory is where you have symptoms, and here are the things that help the symptom. And Materia Medica is here's the homeopathic remedy, or here's the herb or the substance, and here's the things that it helps. So it's organized into all those kinds of, like, there are lists of all those things organized. It's very, very helpful. So, you know, my main symptoms of Lyme disease and Bartonella are intermittent tremors and fatigue. Those are my main symptoms. Pain isn't even much of a thing. I'm very, very lucky. I must not have a positive HLA-DR4 gene, because joint pain is not a big deal for me. I do have a tricky knee, but like I'm sitting here talking to you, this knee doesn't really bother me. The knee does feel a little achy sometimes when I feel kind of flared, but not bad. It's not even stopping me from riding my bike or doing yoga. And I do lots of things for, you know, I'm taking all kinds of things that could help the inflammation in the knee. And I have salves that I put on it. I am using topical magnesium. I'm using topical comfrey. Sometimes you use a salve that has topical comfrey, goldenrod. It has topical comfrey, goldenrod, rue, and something else. Anyway, comfrey, rue, and goldenrod are the big three that are in that salve, and I really like that. And I also have a wonderful salve I found online that's just, it's pure coconut oil, and you can tell it's coconut oil because if it's cold, stuff is hard. And then when it gets warm out, it gets liquidy. It's just coconut oil, and it has frankincense and myrrh in it. And then it says it has gold writing on it. There's no gold in it, even though gold is something that's known to help with arthritis. How funny is that? But I found this salve, this coconut, frankincense, and myrrh. And when I put it on, it's very soothing. Ron is having some problems, which we'll talk about in a minute. And he pulled out the CBD sports cream, and he was very impressed with it. So the thing with the CBD sports cream is it smelled pretty minty, didn't it?
It's pretty minty.
Yes.
It's not as minty as I've had others, but it's okay.
So the thing is that CBD sports cream, CBD doesn't get that far into your skin, although maybe this does a bit. I think a lot of what you're feeling when you use the CBD sports cream is the mint. There's wintergreen oil, mint. There's some kind of menthol in it. And menthol is a wonderful anodyne, meaning it helps with pain. It's a wonderful anti-inflammatory. That's what Bengay has in it. It has menthol and camphor, and those things help with pain. So it's probably the combination of the menthol and the CBD, and it's helping his pain. I'm not actually using that right now, but I could use that on my knee, I suppose. I should try it. Yeah. But I really like the other things that I'm using. So anyway, yesterday was I chilled out. I had some tremors, and I'm not getting tremors nearly as bad as I was when they happen. I think that what I have is my spinal accessory nerve, which is comes off the vagus nerve. My left spinal accessory nerve is affected because I get the tremors in the left side of my neck, going down to, my neck will shake, my head will shake a bit. The head doesn't shake as much as it's responding to this tremor in the left side, and it goes down my SEM, this is the sternocleidomastoid muscle, the muscle that attaches your ear down to your clavicle. And that shakes, and then it'll go down to my left scapula. And that's pretty much what shakes. Sometimes I will get tremors in my right foot, and I think I have nerve damage in that right foot, because when I passed out the day after I had the vaccine in 2021, my foot got pinned under me, and I think I whacked it really hard and I damaged the nerve. So what happens? Tick-borne illness loves weak spots, and that's a weak spot. So there's a weak nerve in there. So if I'm having a flare, that foot will twitch. Right now I'm feeling pretty good. So I'm a little tired, but I don't feel shaky, twitchy, tremory, which is yay. Which that's a great sentence for a professional to say. Yay, which is yay. All right. So one of the things that I'm experimenting with is lithium, and I'm going to talk a bit about why lithium is good for you. And again, I'm not talking about prescription lithium. You take hundreds of milligrams of lithium carbonate. That is not what I am taking. I am taking ones of milligrams of lithium orotate. And so I was taking, when I would have tremors, try to limit the lithium use to when I had tremors. But I think it's not necessary to be afraid of lithium in very low doses. That it's good for you in a lot of ways. It does really calm the nervous system. There's a lot of benefits to it. And so I got 5 milligram lithium orotate pills, just, and that was because Marty Ross, who is a functional medicine Lyme literate doctor, suggested for tremors that you use lithium orotate 5 milligrams 3 times a day. So I said, all right, I'll get the 5 milligrams. I'll take one. And if I need more, I'll take more. When I take the 5 milligrams, that seems to be all I need. So then I got the idea of, I was starting to give lithium to children, because back at our last naturopathic conference, we talked about how low-dose lithium can be helpful for children in the spectrum, especially if they have a lot of agitation and anger. And so for children, I'm going to use 1 milligram doses or less. And so I said, you know what? I think the lithium makes me tired, because I took a 5 milligram lithium last Friday, and then I was fighting to stay awake during the possum presentation. And so I said, why don't I get the 1 milligram and experiment with that? And I got two forms. I got 1 milligram lithium orotate pills, and I got lithium orotate liquid. I actually don't know if it's lithium orotate, it might be another form, but a liquid that, you know, has 1 milligram per 15 drops. And so yesterday I was having some shaky, tremory stuff. I took 1 milligram, and then a little later, I was like, all right, I need a little bit more. I took another milligram of the pills. And then at the end of the day, before I went to sleep, I said, let me crack that that liquid bottle. And I said, let me take 1 more milligram. And I dropped 15 drops onto a spoon, and I put it under my tongue. I felt something right away. I went, whoa. And then I slept like a rock. So I think the next time I feel like, hopefully this won't happen, but you never, you know, I can't count on it not happening. The next time I have tremors, knock on wood, maybe I won't. I'm going to start with the liquid and put it under my tongue and see what happens at a dose of 1 milligram. But I'm impressed, because I think it settles my nervous system. And again, who knows? Maybe I'm my father's daughter, and, you know, because he took lithium carbonate for his bipolar disorder. And maybe I have some elements of that lithium benefits my nervous system. But I'm not interested in taking the lithium carbonate, because I don't know that I'm truly bipolar, but my nervous system does respond to the lithium. I do think it makes me tired, though. So I want to take as low a dose as I possibly can. And hopefully one day, you know, my nerve between immune stimulating herbs and the protection of my organs and all the things that I'm doing, I won't need it anymore. One more thing that was good about reading Buhner is that, you know, in reading through the items for Lyme disease, there's a lot of crossover for what helps with Lyme and what helps with Bartonella, which is great. And one big thing that I found was an herb called Sita acuta. And Sita acuta, now he talks about how it's not necessary, or you don't have to focus so much on antimicrobial herbs or antimicrobial anything for Lyme, that it's much more important to make the terrain inhospitable to the Lyme or whatever co-infection you happen to have. But he said Sita acuta is something that can kill Bartonella. So I said, why don't I hold off on the Sita acuta? Because he says, don't worry about it. Focus on your cardiovascular system. Take your Japanese knotweed and your kudzu to protect your nervous system, and your cryptolepis, which does kill stuff and gets into persister cells. And he also said sarsaparilla, which is something I've been taking, thinking that it would help kill Lyme, but also support my nervous system, or not my nerve, but my hormonal, just be an adaptogen for me, maybe working as an adaptogen. But he says, after all that, he doesn't think sarsaparilla works. It's not useful for killing Lyme. So I may keep the sarsaparilla and I may not, just because, you know, it'd be one less thing to take. And I'm taking other adaptogens, taking cordyceps, taking rhodiola, taking Eleuthero. So do I need to take sarsaparilla too? Probably not. Then I went back into holistic treatment of Lyme in the Lyme disease book, and found that remember I told you about how there's a repertory and a materia medica, and the repertory makes it so that you, The repertory has the list of symptoms, whereas the materia medica is a list of herbs and what they do for you. So in the repertory, I found a section on tremors, and there wasn't a section on tremors in the Bartonella book. Go figure. But in the section of tremors, it mentioned a couple of things, and one of the things it mentioned was Sitta acuta. I said, oh my, I'm going to put in the Sitta acuta. It also mentioned gabapentin, the drug. I'm not going to take gabapentin. I'm trying not to take a drug for tremors. I do have propranolol in my kitchen, but I'm trying not to take that. I haven't taken it at all, and I'm hoping not to have to take it. And I don't want to ask Dr. LaGuardia for gabapentin either. I think the lithium works, so I don't really need to. So lithium, but I'm going to try the Sitta acuta too, Buhner is big on taking lots of herb. I mean, he's talking, you know, 3 or 4 droppers of every herb a day, and I'm only doing 2 right now. He also says very much that you adjust your program to you, that any protocol that he says, this is a base protocol, and you adjust the protocol for the patient or for yourself. You do what you need to do for you. So I've been doing that, and I'm finding that right now what my comfort level is to do 2 droppers of all of the herbs. So he says some people are so sensitive, they take half a dropper of the herbs a day, and that's all they can, or 5 drops at a time. So I'm able to take 2 droppers, and you know, Mariah had said 3 scoops of modified citrus pectin, and my digestive system just couldn't handle that. It works much better if I just have the 1 scoop plus 1 binder a day and you know, a dose of chlorella every day. So that's working well for throughput, if you will, and my digestive system, that things were getting kind of backed up, or they would get backed up and then they would get dramatic, and I'd have alternating backed up and dramatic, and that's not, my digestive system doesn't really function that way. And so when I found that 1 scoop of the modified citrus pectin plus 1 binder plus the chlorella, dose of chlorella, that works, plus eating a high fiber diet. And maybe that's why, that was the problem, that I generally eat high fiber anyway, and so that's why I was getting the drama. So I don't have the drama anymore. That's nice, and just everything's working better in that way, between the probiotics and, you know, all the fiber that I eat and those items. So anyway, I'm going to add a little bit of Sitta acuta to see if that keeps the tremors at bay. And, you know, if this is being caused by Bartonella, then it'll do some killing of the Bartonella. And the other thing that I learned is that Buhner asserts that Bartonella doesn't cause herx, that it doesn't have neurotoxins that it dumps into your system, that you kill the Bartonella and then it's dead. So that's interesting. And I said, well, so if that's true, now the only thing is if the Sitta acuta runs around and kills Lyme definitely causes herxes. So I have to be careful of that. But and it's so hard to know, because if Bartonella doesn't cause herxes and I'm having symptoms, if they are Bartonella symptoms, then I'm having a flare. And with Lyme, you don't know if you're having a flare or a herx. Since my symptoms, when they happen, they're not extreme. I mean, the fatigue can be really extreme, but the tremors are not as extreme as they have been, and they haven't kept me home from work, and they seem to be manageable, and I seem to get through them, and they seem to be brought on by too much activity and not enough rest, and probably it could be sugar and caffeine too, which I have to work on backing off on. So anyway, I'm intending to get a little more rest the next couple of days. I'll probably not get back on the bike until Wednesday. And it's going to be yucky weather going along for the next week or week and a half. So any biking is going to happen indoors. So that's better too. I mean, it's not better because I enjoy it so much more outside, but I have more control over what I do if I'm riding indoors. I can do a very flat ride and set it to that and not go very hard. I just don't want to lose my fitness. I have to say, the other thing that I have noticed is that I'm doing a lot of yoga, you know, so I'm doing both moderate classes, which includes some building of strength and core and balance, as well as yin and restorative yoga. And I haven't been doing specific weight training. Like, I haven't been doing, you know, what I would call weight training activities. Like, I'm not using weights. I'm just using the body weight activity of the yoga. And I find that I'm pretty strong on the bike. I've climbed hills. I didn't have trouble climbing hills. I mean, I didn't climb extreme hills, but I had to climb some hills because we live in northeastern Connecticut, and if you're going to ride your bike, you're going to climb a hill. So I'm very pleased that yoga is really useful for me for strength training. So I do recommend it for that. So the big changes are, under the tongue, liquid lithium at very low doses, 0.5 to 1 milligrams at a time to see how it works. And I think it works. And or 1 milligram pills. And so the total dose yesterday was 3 milligrams. And I slept like a rock and knocked out the tremors. I'm very pleased. So 5 milligrams might be overkill for me. And I'm going to add Theta Acuta, and I've been adding adaptogens, Eleuthero, Rhodiola, Cordyceps, and I'm going to switch from Cordyceps pills to Cordyceps liquid. So that's what's going on with me. All right. So now, the next thing I wanted to do is, shout outs to, listeners who made questions and comments. So we have Craig, who is a regular listener. Shout out to Craig. And we were talking about Ron's cholesterol issues last week. And he wanted to know about, hey, what about red yeast rice? So red yeast rice is a supplement. The thing with red yeast rice is if it works for you, it has lovastatin in it. Lovastatin is a statin. That's how it works. It's just another statin. So if you take red yeast rice, it's going to... you might have the same side effects that you had from the statins. So I don't like to recommend it a lot. You know, some people come in taking it. And so the problem is that red yeast rice, you don't know if your red yeast rice actually has lovastatin in it. Because it's only really going to work if it has the lovastatin in it. If it has lovastatin in it, it's a statin. And you have the same problems that you have with statins. So I'm not big on red yeast rice. So that just to say, some people take it and do fine with it and don't get symptoms. But then some people take statins and do fine with it and don't get symptoms. Yeah. That's not Ron. And that's not a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So I'm not big on the red yeast rice. Then there's niacin. Niacin sometimes works and sometimes it doesn't. To take niacin to help lower your cholesterol, when you take the niacin, you have to take a dose that can impact your liver. You have to watch the person's liver enzymes. And it has to be real niacin. It has to be actual niacin. It can't be niacinamide. It can't be inositol-hexaniacinate. It has to be true niacin. You can get, and so what they try to do is they give you Endurosin, which is extended release niacin. So it releases over time, but it has to be real niacin. So Endurosin might make you flush less. I have people who take Endurosin. Some people, the niacin works for them, and some people it doesn't. I found that if your goal is to lower cholesterol, first of all, lowering cholesterol may not be a great goal. And second of all, the natural substances don't tend to work very well. They don't actually lower cholesterol very much. I've given people bergamot. I've given people plant sterols. What lowers cholesterol is either taking a drug that lowers cholesterol, in my experience, taking a drug that lowers cholesterol, and or working really hard at changing your diet and getting cardio exercise. That works. So if you drop your sugar and most of your starchy food and eat clean protein, and now if you eat a vegetarian diet, and vegan, and you don't eat junk, you don't like overdo starch, that you're really eating fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds and legumes, that's what you're eating, that will lower cholesterol. That definitely works. The thing is, if you have familial hypercholesterolemia, that is, you tend to have a gene that makes you make a lot of cholesterol, and your total cholesterol is sitting over 300, and your LDL is sitting in the high 100s to over 200, then those are the people that kind of need statins. And they probably don't need to lower the cholesterol very much. I think what happened to Ron is his cholesterol got dropped way too much, especially for an athlete. That a person who's an athlete should not have an LDL of 59. That just shouldn't happen, because the person can't rebuild their cells with an LDL that low. And now Ron's paying the price. He's not able to take the Repatha anymore. And we're going to have to figure out, should he take something, or should he just rely on, diet and exercise and antioxidants? mean, we have him on, you know, we have him on resveratrol. I have him on CardioFlow, which is a compound that has a lot of vitamins and minerals and a little EDTA and a bunch of things to help to move plaque out of his arteries. So we're hoping for that. You could drink the pomegranate juice, too. That would help you. I don't know if you want to do that. Craig also mentioned Coenzyme Q10. Will you take, or, That was Sonia who was talking about the Coenzyme Q10. The Coenzyme Q10 is specifically for when you take a statin. Coenzyme Q10 is not going to be, you don't take it for the same reason when you're taking non-statin cholesterol-lowering medications.
I am taking it, though.
Right, and that's fine.
Is that okay?
Absolutely. Coenzyme Q10 stimulates the activity of the mitochondria because it helps the electron transport chain to work. So those are the little spark plugs inside your mitochondria that give you energy. And as we get older, we don't have as much cells. We don't rebuild cells as well. You're having trouble rebuilding your cells because your cholesterol is too low. So if you take CoQ10, it might energize you a little more and help you to have more activity in your muscle cells. So it's fine to take. I'm not on a statin. I'm taking Coenzyme Q10. Of course, Coenzyme Q10 can help to lower blood pressure. It helps your heart to function more effectively. It can prevent arrhythmias. And, you know, I'm fighting chronic Lyme and Bartonella. So those things can affect your cardiovascular system. So it's good for me to take CoQ10. So CoQ10 generally can't hurt. As people get older, you need boosts to your energy and your mitochondria. So it's helpful for that. It's fine for you to take it as it is. It's just that you're not taking it to replace. The thing is that statins deplete Coenzyme Q10. And that's why you directly take it when you're taking a statin. But that's not as much of an issue for ezetimibe or for evolocumab, the PCSK9 inhibitors. They don't deplete Coenzyme Q10. You deplete Coenzyme Q10 by not being able to make cells. You're going to have less in your body if you have less cells because the Coenzyme Q10 is in the mitochondria inside your cells. So the other thing that Craig mentioned was flaxseed oil. So flaxseed oil, I'm not the hugest fan of flaxseed oil, because it goes bad very easily. It has polyunsaturated fatty acids. You really have to keep it in the refrigerator. And you have to if you're taking pills, you have to taste it periodically and see if it's bitter. If it's bitter, throw it out. It's rancid. I'm a much bigger fan of fish oil, which is what I take. I don't take flaxseed. I eat ground flax seeds, which don't seem to go bad as easily as the oil. I eat those sometimes. I'm more of a fan of chia and hemp seeds. But I do eat flaxseed sometimes. That's my go-to when I eat oatmeal. And I don't eat oatmeal all the time for no good reason. And I could eat more oatmeal, I suppose. So flaxseed oil, however, if somebody won't take fish oil, they burp on it, or they really want to take it, then I just caution them and say, make sure you keep it in the refrigerator. Make sure you taste it periodically to make sure it's not bitter. And then it has alpha-linolenic acid in it. It has been studied to reduce the frequencies of bronchitis. So it is definitely anti-inflammatory. So you can definitely take it. I think it tastes good. When you get the liquid flaxseed oil, I think it tastes yummy if it's not bitter. And I will sometimes get it and just eat it that way. But you really have to eat it quickly because it does go bad quickly. You can throw, if you have extra vitamin E, you can throw vitamin E into the flaxseed oil to help to stabilize it. You can also put, if you don't mind the taste, you can put rosemary in it as well. And those are good antioxidants to stabilize it. So let me see. I have some concerns here. Let me see. Pescatarian veggie diet is good for... pescatarian veggie diet is very good for generally for inflammation and lowering cholesterol. That's definitely going to help you if that's mostly what you eat. You get resveratrol from Japanese knotweed. That's true. Cat's claw, I'm not so sure, but cat's claw is a great antioxidant. It's really a go-to for treating chronic Lyme. All right. So let's get the update on you.
Me?
What do you want to talk about around your saying bye to cholesterol-lowering meds?
Still fighting with it.
Okay, so what's happening?
What's happening is some of the
quote-unquote side effects that the drug lists have subsided a little bit.
That's good.
But then I've got these other things that are still going on. So the only positive thing I can say is I've had a lot of muscle fatigue, and I've had a lot of it's just discomfort with trying to push myself very hard, including climbing stairs.
Ugh.
You know, which is kind of ridiculous because I climb stairs all day long, so it's kind of a, you know, it's a daily thing that I'm struggling with because my legs burn when I get to the top of the stairs. My heart rate's not increased. There's nothing elevated dramatically other than just a tremendous amount of fatigue within the legs. Cramping at night has been a huge issue.
Right.
That has been ridiculous. And it's, you know, we're trying to control that with magnesium. And I am taking magnesium now, but...
And you exceeded the dose.
I have exceeded the dose of magnesium.
Which is okay. So
I'm backing it down a little bit.
So you know what's going on, why you managed to exceed the dose. And how many milligrams of magnesium was too much for you, do you know?
I don't know. I didn't look
So you were taking of the pill.
Container.
Okay, yeah. Of the bottle, the white bottle.
Yeah.
Taking two of those, right?
Well, I was up to three.
Okay, so those pills are 120 milligrams per.
Right.
So that means you're up to 360 milligrams of magnesium.
Right.
And you weren't taking another form of magnesium orally?
No.
Okay, so 360 milligrams of magnesium glycinate was too much for you. Mm-hmm. For some people, that's not too much for them. The reason it's too much of you... For you, it's because you eat your veggies.
Yeah, I eat my veggies.
You eat vegetables and...
Yeah.
No, it's because you eat your veggies and it's because you eat nuts and seeds. You eat nuts and seeds.
Not so much. Yeah, more
veggies. That's right.
More
it's more than the veggies. More so you're veggies, getting... That's where you're getting your magnesium from the things that you eat. And if you... Somebody who doesn't eat a lot of produce... is going to have much more dramatic effects from magnesium. So, but anything green has magnesium in it because there's chlorophyll in it.
Right.
So you're getting your magnesium from that. So you can only take two magnesium pills a day.
Right.
Yeah, and that's fine.
That's enough.
So, because otherwise it comes out the other end.
Right. Yeah. So as far as the cramping goes, you know, I'm hoping it's going to get better.
Yeah.
You know, it's been on and off, and sometimes it's so severe that I don't sleep at all at night.
We also gave you topical magnesium.
I've got topical magnesium that I'm using also. And
the homeopathic leg cramps? Did you try that?
I have not.
Oh, you could try that.
No, I haven't tried that.
Because we have topical and oral for that as well.
You know, and I only would use it when I'm, you know, suffering from it, when I'm in full cramp. And not sometimes when you go into full leg cramps, you don't think very rationally about what's going on because you're in, like, distress, pretty major distress. But if anyone's ever had leg cramps before, when I get them, they're not pretty at all. Anyway, on the other side, my performance on the bike, I've limited myself to just keeping my heart rate down to a zone 2, low zone 3 level. So pretty low for me. But I did test it 2 weekends ago at my long class in spin class, and my wattage output was really, really poor considering the amount of pain that my legs were in. Yesterday, my wattage output was considerably higher.
I think
things are getting a little bit better. And that's all I can say, is that things seem to be getting a little bit better. But I'm still not 100%, and I'm still very concerned because I have an event coming up this weekend that I may or may not be able to participate in because I am concerned about my ability to be able to climb a hill without having severe fatigue.
And pain.
And pain. Right. And it's not heart related. It's not related towards, you know, I push so hard that my heart goes way up into the 80 or 90% range. I haven't seen that in weeks, many weeks.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm not so concerned about that part, but I am very concerned about the amount of muscle fatigue that I have in my body right now.
Right.
And that's why I decided to stop taking the blocker that I was taking.
PCSK9 inhibitor.
Yeah.
So your last dose were 3.5 weeks out, right?
I will be 2 weeks out on Wednesday.
2 weeks out from your last dose?
Correct.
Oh, all right. So so if you're getting a little bit better after 2 weeks out from your... I thought that there was a Wednesday that you were supposed to take it and you didn't.
That's correct. And that was 2 weeks ago.
Okay, so you're almost 4 weeks. You're 3.5 weeks out from your last dose.
Okay, I guess that would be, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So if you're 3.5 weeks out and you're starting to get better, that's encouraging. Because there are people who never get better.
I'm hoping because I went to the, not to mention any names, but I'm going to. I went to the Amgen site, which is the manufacturer of this particular pharmaceutical, and they said that in 57% of the cases of people that are on this particular medication, in about a month, they are able to remove it primarily from their body. 37% have had the same results in 6 months, and the rest have had the same result in 1 year. So I'm going with the, I'm athletic and I have a high metabolism, and I'm just kind of going with, 4 weeks, I should be okay.
And you are exercising somewhat, so that's going to help to move your circulation and move it out of your body quicker.
I am still moving, yes, I am. I'm just not moving very hard or very fast.
Right.
I usually do at least 2 high-intensity workouts a week. So,
and you're not able to do that.
It's been hard.
But you're still getting exercise. You're still moving your body. And we also gave you milk thistle to take to help to push it out of your body a little bit faster. And then you're taking a lot of protein to rebuild your to rebuild your nerves.
Doing all the things I've normally done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, but the intensity of the pain when I get to the top of a set of stairs is hard to describe.
We also, and we also even gave you a muscle relaxant.
Yeah, I took that one night. That was one. That was after I had a sleepless night.
Right.
So I took that, and then I slept like a baby. But, I don't want to have to rely on that either if I can help it.
Yeah. Right? So, I mean, it's okay. I mean, if you have to take that once in a while, and that knocked you out too. It made you sleep.
Yeah, it did. It did.
Yeah.
But I just don't want to be fighting against a pharmaceutical that keeps me from doing the good things for my body that I need to do to be able to get away from the pharmaceutical.
Right. And the thing is...
Is that like a weird thing or
that's
what?
That's right. I understand.
You know, if I can't work out... this is the argument that I had... over 6 months ago with my cardiologist, and I said, because when I was doing statins, and I just stopped taking my statins for 2 weeks. Good news there was I took those every single day, so in 2 weeks, I was way better, like remarkably better.
Yeah.
And pain had gone away, heart rate was bopping back up into the 90% range when I did high-intensity intervals. So everything was really came back quickly, and including wattage on the bike and all that stuff. That was, like I said, that was good news, and it made a big difference. And that's when we made the switch over, because my cardiologist was still concerned about my cholesterol. So, I'm hoping it all comes back, because it's really frustrating to not be able to do what you really love to do.
Right.
And the conversation that I had with him is, if I am restricted as to how much high intensity workout I can do and building my HDLs and thereby lowering my LDLs, isn't the drug keeping me from doing what I should naturally be doing?
Right. And that doesn't make sense.
And that doesn't make sense.
And the exercise is what saved your life in the first place.
But I just, you know, it just makes no sense.
The exercise is what saved you in the first place because you kept doing the exercise and it gave you collateral circulation around your heart because your coronary arteries were blocked. So you made collateral circulation.
Right.
And you can't do that if you can't exercise.
Right. And I was told by my surgeon that I literally saved my own life.
Yeah, right. So, and but you want to continue to be able to save your own life, which makes sense.
Yeah,
meanwhile,
makes sense.
Meanwhile, the focus that we're going to have for you to keep your, to protect you from having coronary artery disease is going to be to take things that make it so that you're less likely to make atherosclerotic plaques. So you're going to take antioxidants. You're already taking resveratrol. Mm-hmm. You're taking curcumin. And we have you on a supplement that has a bunch of minerals in it. The magnesium will help too, by the way, competing for absorption with the calcium that makes the atherosclerotic plaques. And then it's going to help to chelate out the items that tend to have you make that. And mm-hmm. then, you know, you just make sure you take and eat things that thin your blood. You're already taking aspirin. You're continuing to take that. So, and then you're eating fruits and vegetables. You're not taking fish oil because you can't stomach it.
It doesn't stay in me.
But you eat olive oil.
It comes back up.
Right. So, but you're eating olive oil. We eat olive oil pretty much every,
all the time,
most of the time.
Every day. Yeah.
And virgin coconut oil. So we're, and sometimes avocado oil.
Yeah.
So
all,
we're.
That's every day.
And
I
we
don't
eat avocados.
Use bad oils. Yeah.
Right. And so so we're doing the best we can to protect you without doing the cholesterol-lowering medication.
That's it.
So that's interesting. Anyway, there's a homeopathic product that you can use that can help with cramping, leg cramps. The other thing I haven't tried with you is to give you cramp bark, which is something we give to women when they're on their periods and they have menstrual cramps, but we could give that to you.
Yeah, well, let's try one thing at a time instead of having, you know, 15 different things that I'm doing all at once because that makes me confused.
Well, you have to keep things around because if this doesn't work, you have to try something else.
Right, I understand.
Yeah, but I mean, the methocarbamol had its place, which was interesting. You know, we don't like to do pharmaceuticals. And then it doesn't hurt to use the topical magnesium. I use topical magnesium every day. And you could do that. And that's not going to, it doesn't get very far into your body. You can definitely use that. All right. Let's see. So let's talk a little bit. We'll finish off talking about why chlorella is good for you. So we got into a lot of Lyme stuff and a lot of cholesterol stuff, which is fine. So let's talk about why chlorella is good for you. So we got into a bit of it last week. So here's some more stuff on why chlorella is good for you. It has antioxidant properties. You know, we also said that chlorella may help with cholesterol. Mm. It has antioxidant properties. It has chlorophyll in it, vitamin C, beta-carotene, lycopene, and lutein. So it has a lot of good stuff in it that's protective. And those can help with a lot of chronic diseases. They can reduce the production of advanced glycation end products, which... That's when you're measuring somebody's hemoglobin A1C, that's what you're measuring. You're measuring advanced glycation end products. And so it can help to protect you from forming more of those, from having having oxidative substances attached to your cells that makes them more brittle and makes them fall apart. It can help with blood pressure. I don't know if it's doing that with me, but it can help. And that's a good thing. And the thing about chlorella is it can help heart and kidney health, which is good for your blood pressure. So even if my blood pressure is a little high, it's calming my heart function and it's helping my kidney function, which is always useful. So there was a study with people with mildly high blood pressure who took 4 grams of chlorella in a day for 12 weeks. And by the end, the people had lower blood pressure readings than those who took the placebo. So that's good. So I should monitor my blood pressure as time goes along. And there was another study, and they showed that in healthy men taking chlorella, there was less stiffness of the arteries. So that it's going to have some nitric oxide enhancing benefits. So that's good. And there is arginine in chlorella. So arginine is going to be a nitric oxide enhancer. There's also potassium, calcium, and omega-3s. So all of those things help.
It might improve your blood sugar levels. That it can lower fasting blood sugar levels in both healthy individuals and those with lifestyle-related diseases. And that there's also studies that show that chlorella can help your blood sugar control and increase your insulin sensitivity in people with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So if you have fatty liver disease, chlorella is something you can add. So that's something that can be helpful. Respiratory illness. It's been studied on COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It has some components that can help reduce inflammation. There's a lot of antioxidants in it. That it shows that it can improve antioxidant status, but didn't translate to improvements in breathing capability. So if you already have damage in COPD, it might help with that, but it probably will help help with progression. So there are more studies needed to determine its effect on respiratory conditions. And it may help with aerobic endurance, which is that's good for me. It showed a positive effect. The researchers gave a group of adults 6 grams or a placebo. That's a lot of chlorella. I'm taking, I think, a gram a day. And I'm taking chlorella. I'm taking fermented chlorella, so it's going to be a little more potent than straight up chlorella. So I'm going to be able to get inside the chlorella cells and get the benefits of it a little bit better. And so the chlorella group showed a significant improved ability to saturate their lungs with oxygen, which is a measure of endurance. So you're going to get your hemoglobin function is going to be a bit better because the chlorella has a lot of chlorophyll in it, and chlorophyll has the heme ring in it. And instead of having iron in the middle of it like we do, it has magnesium in the middle of it. And so you take that heme ring and you can make more hemoglobin, so you're going to have more oxygenation in your body. And there's also branched chain amino acids in it. That's leucine, isoleucine, and valine, and they help with aerobic performance. I think to get the branched chain amino acids, you probably have to take more than what I'm taking. Chlorella may also promote eye health because it has lutein and zeaxanthin in it, which I'm taking separately anyway. It can help with your liver health. It can improve markers of liver health. It can help your digestion and reduce bloating, and also may help with PMS. That it can relieve symptoms of premenstrual symptom. It's anecdotal. It's not like a good study. There are some women who've reported, yay, I take chlorella, it helps my PMS. But it has some calcium and B vitamins, which can help to reduce PMS. All right, so that's... sometimes people get nausea and abdominal discomfort from it. I have not. And so you want to make sure you're getting a good source of your chlorella, and you want to get it from a good brand, and you want to make sure that your product is trustworthy. And if you have immunodeficiency or immune system medications, you may not want to take it. So if you have an autoimmune condition, it might be helpful and it might not be. And if your immune system is being controlled by drugs, like you're on a DMARD, a drug that modifies your inflammatory systems, or if you're taking a monoclonal antibody, something that reduces inflammation, or you're taking a tyrosine kinase inhibitor, one of those for autoimmune conditions, you have to check with somebody before you take check with a practitioner before you take something like this. So that's chlorella. Chlorella is helping me with my detoxification. It's one of the things I'm taking. I take it in the middle of the night because it does bind toxins. So I want it to be away from my food and I want it to be away from my other supplements. So I take that with a binder, and the binder has zeolite and fulvic acid and charcoal and aloe in it. All right, so that's chlorella, and we have just a few minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about cordyceps. So cordyceps, there's a science-backed cordyceps information. It's a genus of parasitic fungi that grows on the larvae of insects. When the fungi attack their host, they replace its tissue and sprout long, slender stems that grow outside the host body, which isn't very nice. When you buy cordyceps as a supplement, that's generally not how it's generated. The cordyceps that you get in the United States is usually grown on in fungal cultures. It's not it's not cordyceps that has been grown on caterpillars or on insects. So their cordyceps is thought to boost exercise performance. It can help increase your body's production of ATP, adenosine triphosphate, which is great for your muscles. And it can improve the way your body uses oxygen, especially during exercise. There was a test on exercise capacity in 30 healthy older adults on a stationary bike. And they used either 3 grams of a synthetic cordyceps or placebo for 6 weeks and had a 7% increase in their VO2 max, which is not nothing. That's a measure that's used to determine your fitness level.
That's a lot.
Yes. And a similar study, 20 healthy older adults had either a gram of cordyceps or a placebo. And while researchers found no change in VO2 max in either group, participants had other improvements in exercise performance. And it generally helps with older adults. Yep. And
almost 3.
Right. So the current research suggests cordyceps may or may not be effective in helping trained athletes. There are anti-aging properties. The elderly have traditionally used cordyceps to reduce fatigue and boost strength. This is what I need. And believe their antioxidant content may explain their anti-aging potential. And some studies have shown that it helps with antioxidants in aged mice, and it helps memory and sexual function. Antioxidants help to neutralize free radicals. There was a mouse study that showed that cordyceps, mice given cordyceps live several months longer than mice given the placebo. Another study found cordyceps extended the life of fruit flies. So it's not clear that it has those effects in humans, but it is something that's been used for ages in Chinese medicine. So I'm going to leave it there. We'll get back into why cordyceps is good for you next week. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, a talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores and WHUS.org.